This is Birth to Work Radio.
Try to convince a community that had always felt if you had a strong back, you could always make a decent living. That disappeared, but the same people stayed in the community.
The competition is much more prepared in terms of the knowledge base and the expectations, and we have to get there very, very quickly.
The problem with education in America is a problem of trying to use a bureaucratic form to do what is basically a cultural and moral mission.
It's important for business leaders to recognize they play an important role in the vibrancy of the community.
I always felt that as a pediatrician, I was also an educator because the trust that people have in us.
We know that when parents know their children are in an academic crisis, they will move mountains.
The most important thing for parents to do is spend time in human interaction with children.
My goal as a community leader now is to create responsible, engaged citizens. I have to emulate what I want them to do.
And now, here's your hosts, Elaine V. Scott and Rick Stevens.
Welcome to Birth to Work Radio. My name is Elaine V. Scott, Executive Director and Chief Connectivity Officer of Birth to Work. Joining me as co-host today is Rick Stevens, a veteran business and industry leader for over 30 years in his own right. Hi, Rick.
Hi, Elaine.
Today, we're talking with Dr. Sonia Whitaker. In her continuous and ever-evolving dedication and commitment to schools, Dr. Sonia Whitaker serves in the capacity of Director of Literacy and Social Sciences for the largest preschool through eighth grade school district in the state of Illinois. In this position, she is responsible for coordinating curriculum, instruction, assessment, and implementing research-based professional development opportunities for literacy coaches, reading specialists, principals, and classroom teachers. Her responsibilities also include monitoring, analyzing, and interpreting state and district data for continuous improvement of student achievement in the area of literacy. Dr. Whitaker further serves her community as an educational consultant, keynote speaker, and workshop presenter. Do you ever sleep, Dr. Whitaker?
Hello.
Welcome to the show.
Thank you so much for the opportunity.
We want to talk a little bit about why you've been invited today, and throughout the course of our time together, we're going to talk about your background leading up to the upcoming summit that you'll be hosting next fall, as well as the personal and professional experiences that have moved you toward developing the desire to make such an incredible impact on a global scale. And what I'd like to begin with is a little bit about your background, focusing on what you've learned about working with school districts of all types.
Yes, thank you very much. And again, thank you for the opportunity. My background consists of, it's in the field of education. I've served in the capacity of classroom teacher, assistant principal, principal, and now, as you mentioned, director of literacy. I'm a central office administrator. But most passionately, probably my first teaching career year, rather, in my teaching career, I discovered that a large number of students were not making the type of academic gains that I knew that they were capable of making. And so being the rookie teacher that I was at the time, I decided that I would consult with peers to find out why they weren't making the gains. And more often than not, my peers, fellow educators, shared with me that in the inner city system in which I worked in at the time, that we lacked the financial and human resources needed to provide all students with high-quality academic experiences. And so as a result of that, students weren't making the gains. So 15 years later, after that experience, I've had an opportunity to serve as building level and central office administrators in affluent school districts where resources are plentiful in nature, especially when you compare them to some inner city schools with limited resources. And Elaine, as I shared with you in the past very passionately, what I have discovered is that even in affluent systems in America, there are large numbers of students who have failed to make the type of academic gains that we know that they're capable of making. And the other point that I'd like to make is I am a practitioner, so I'm still in the field. I am an educator first. But what I discovered having seen that is I decided one day it's got to be more than what's happening in the classroom. It's got to be more than what's happening in terms of teachers interacting with fellow administrators. I discovered after, essentially, I was on a journey to discover why students weren't making these gains. And what I discovered is that it was because educators were trying to accomplish the goal alone. And so, in fact, what I say today to fellow educators, if we could have done this thing alone, meaning increased student achievement, we would have did it a long time ago. And so immediately I began to develop a passion to work collaboratively with other key stakeholders to increase the likelihood that our students were successful, students who would then go off into the workforce and either be successful or not successful, depending upon their preparation in school.
Sonia, this is Rick. What a great story, because I think it puts in perspective what so many believes. It's only about the economics, and what you're talking about, the economics may be an element, but it's about the whole child and what's going on in their lives, not just what goes on in school.
Mm-hmm.
You use the term collaboration. What does that mean to you?
Very good. I like that question. When I think of the term collaboration, the term collaboration means to me when two or more people, absolutely acknowledge and accept the fact that the two of us are more powerful than either one of us singularly. And I think that people play around, they use the term collaboration as a catch term, as a company line. But the reality is that if I believe in my soul that I can accomplish this job or get this thing done, for the lack of a better term, singularly, and if you believe that singularly, then in our mind we haven't made the paradigm shift needed to accomplish the goal. So you have to buy solely into the concept that I cannot accomplish the goal that has been set for us without you. And so when people begin, and again, I don't want to sound like I'm giving a punchline, because people have to truly understand that within the depths of their soul, that I can't operate. It's like trying to operate with one arm. The reality is it gets more difficult. So if we're both working in harmony to accomplish the goal, that is the truest form of collaboration, at least from my perspective.
No, I think that's a great, great definition, a great explanation. As many of our listeners know, the foundation of what we talk from a birth-to-work standpoint is really based upon this, the collaboration, where we are committed to work with each other, which is different than partnerships. Partnerships, we can get together, we can come and go, but our destiny is not linked to the other party, and where commitment really is.
Well, it's also there's also a statement about the notion of engagement. And when people are engaged with each other, as we talk about in our own, and we talked about in the introduction, for example, an alignment of purpose, we want to understand integration of action, of activities and purpose, not just working side by side.
Mm-hmm.
And I used the example the other day of spices on a rack. Spices
mm-hmm.
on a rack are all organized, and you know they're standing side by side, but it's not till a little touch of that spice goes into the stew and they're commingled together and they're actually interacting with each other in a really integrated way that you have a new product or a new vision. And we talk about the difference between being integrated and being simply being organized. And that's what I was hearing you say when you were talking about your school district, your school engagement in the South, and
mm-hmm.
then you came up to Illinois,
mm-hmm.
and I discovered, as you did, in a fascinating way, that there is no excuse for relying solely on money as the reason why kids aren't doing well.
That's right.
Now, talk to me a little bit about how you began to reach out and let other people know what you were finding and what were your initial responses as you begin to reveal these ideas to other people.
Well, and it's interesting, because I will tell you that when I went from the South to the North, when I went from a poor inner city setting to a more affluent setting in a suburban area, I was shocked. I said, surely this cannot be the case. I'm thinking back to my experience with peers that I trusted, that surely I'm going to find out that better things are happening in terms of student outcomes. And so, as you and I have talked about before, Elaine, what I discovered is that people were not talking. We were isolated. Everybody was working very hard, but nobody was working together to understand, for example, the perspective that I brought to the table, that in the inner city setting, that resources were limited, gains not made. In the suburban city setting, where resources were plentiful, the same struggles. And so for me to be able to share that to large audiences that this was occurring, I tell you, the people that were most shocked were people in inner city settings where the financial resources existed. They would say to me, Dr. Whitaker, are you saying that we're struggling in terms of our student achievement, literacy achievement, in the same areas in which in systems that have limited resources? And I said, absolutely. Because people are working in such isolation during a time where, again, collaboration is a very quick company line that we use. The reality is people were working in so much of isolation that they weren't able to make the connection. And so I really saw myself as a conduit. I was responsible for delivering a message to the masses to give them a very clear picture of what the reality was. And again, as I've shared in the past, with the sense of disconnection, and I like to give the example of the parent piece, the fact that as educators, we want parents to become involved. And I have to encourage educators to understand the fact that not only inner-city parents, but affluent parents need very explicit details as to what we mean by parental involvement. And the other point that I want to make is not that all of our students are failing, because we have gifted students in our systems as well, and each and every child that reports to the academic system on a daily basis has gifted tendencies. It's our role as educators to tap into that, but we can't do it disconnected without the parents. And so what I have found myself sharing with educators across the country is that we have to practice what I call the policy of intentionality. We have to intentionally provide very explicit details to parents as to what they can do to help increase their students' literacy skills. And an example that I'd like to give that relates to that, I had a parent say to me, she said, "Dr. Whitaker, my son is reading 3 years off grade level." She said he's an eighth grade student reading at the fifth grade level. And his teacher says to me, and everybody, again, they're making an initial attempt to work together. His teacher says to me, read to your child. But he's significantly off grade level. And one of the things that I had to share after the parent shared that it was reading comprehension that the child was struggling in, I had to share with her that reading to your child is absolutely phenomenal. But if you're going to build their comprehension skills, you've got to start with shorter amounts of text. So that is just an example of some very explicit details that have to be given even when we're working with parents to reach out.
I think that's very, very important, because all too often we make an assumption that just because someone has more money in their pocket or maybe another degree under their belt, that they understand things that other people don't. And I think that's a very, very important point.
Mm-hmm.
What we want to do, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we want to explore a little bit further about this idea of why there's this incredible misunderstanding of why it is that there's this difference when the focus has always been about money, and in fact it probably has more to do with leadership. This is Birth to Work Radio. This is Elaine Scott. We'll be right back. And welcome back. This is Elaine Scott. I'm speaking today on Birth to Work Radio with Dr. Sonia Whitaker and my friend and co-founder, Rick Stevens. We're talking to Dr. Whitaker about an issue in education that has to do with performance, that is the same in many districts, regardless of how much money or economic benefit the children have in those districts. And I want to explore that just a little bit further, because so much of the attention that's placed on helping kids do better has usually to do with providing more money. People said, if I just had more money. Now, I want you to go a little bit further into that, because you talked to me about assessment. We note that you work here in terms of coordinating curriculum, instruction, and implementing research-based development. But tell me a little bit about the research you do and how you talk to people about this without bunking them on the head.
Well, you know, and again, this concept of exploration, and I like to tell people that much of my experience in education and with regards to the pursuance of degrees is really to answer a simple question, and at least I thought it was simple, and that is, what's going on? And so after I discovered that the same struggles existed in the inner city setting, at this time I also discovered that there was a big push toward the opening of charter schools or the maintenance of charter schools, which is what my research is focused on. And what I discovered even there, even in charter schools, which are non-traditional public schools, in many cases, I think people believe that all charter schools are private, but many charter schools are funded by public dollars, charter schools within a regular school setting, and they are exempted in some cases from state and federal rules and regulations. But it's an attempt on the part of many organizations and sometimes as businesses to support the concept of better education. But what I discovered is that even in the charter school setting, students were not making the type of academic gains that we know that they were capable of making if it was not done in collaboration with business partners, if it was not done in collaboration with community members, if it was not done in terms of reaching the goals with parents. And so, again, so if you can imagine, I've gone from this inner city setting to the suburban city setting, and then my research is based, I said, well, I'll try one more avenue. Surely it's got to be working in the charter school setting where a great deal of funds have been allocated. And I discovered that in the charter school settings where students were making the academic gains, and I'll go back to the concept that you introduced again, Rick, with regard to the term collaboration, students were only making gains in charter school setting where this concept of collaboration was really, really taken on its own life. And so that's where I am now, is that having had an opportunity to explore a wide variety of avenues, I brought myself back to this point where I sit today in my professional and my personal career, and I say to myself that we just cannot do it in a disconnected format. It won't happen.
So, Sonia, this is certainly, there's a whole group of parents, community leaders, the stakeholders. They're all motivated, you know, to ensure that the children in the community get the right education. Mm-hmm. They certainly all have the expectations. Why do you think if they have the motivations and expectations, you know, they weren't there in terms of being able to get this alignment to be able to collaborate? And you alluded on it a little bit in the first segment. It sounds like maybe they talk different languages.
Absolutely, absolutely. We're speaking different languages. And I like to give the very simple example, Rick, that people don't sit down at the table together. They don't sit down at the table together. And that is actually the vision behind the summit, the Achieving the Dream, the Restoring of Hope in Our Schools and Communities Summit, is what I discovered after meeting with people from the business sector, after meeting with people from the healthcare sector, after being grounded in many years of research, and then as a practitioner, as an educator, what I discovered is although I was physically moving my body and meeting with various different stakeholders, all of the meetings and interactions were disconnected. When I went and I would speak with politicians, when I go and I would speak with business people, it was amazing to me. They would say to me, Dr. Whitaker, I can't believe you actually came to the table. I'm thinking that this is something that all educators do. I'm thinking that this happens naturally. And so if you hear my voice, really everything that is going on with regards to my knowledge base really came as a result of me trying to explore how do I make this academic experience better for students so that we can impact the workforce in a positive way. And it simply came down to people were not sitting at the table to engage in common and intellectual conversation about how do we combine our resources, our financial and our human resources, how do we combine our intelligences for the purpose of accomplishing one clear goal, and that is to ensure that our students were successful and that we were preparing them to contribute to the workforce and to society as a whole. I'm finding that many people, and so I'm very positive in my outlook on what can be accomplished, but I absolutely believe that it will not be accomplished if people are not sitting at the table at the same time. And again, that's the concept behind the summit, is that I just woke up one day in the middle of the night and said, no longer am I going to go to a conference where only educators are there. No longer am I going to sit with people from the business sector by myself, knowing I have access to educators from across the entire world who have the same interest and the same desire as people from the business sector or the healthcare sector. It literally happened overnight that I discovered as a result of my experience that I needed to bring these people, as you say, that have the same desire to the same table so that we can engage in open and honest dialogue, not about the problems that exist, because we know where the problems lie. We know where the resources are needed. The question is, do we possess the political will needed to act upon our knowledge? And we can't get to that point until we agree to all sit down at the same table to come up with solutions that will impact our schools and our country, quite frankly, in a positive way.
All right, I'm gonna intercede here, and I'm going to offer a thought from my end. As someone who has been very committed to this area, just like you, but from a different perspective, sure. And mine was from as advocate for the parent role, it wasn't until I met Rick more than 10 years ago now, and I learned what he meant by the term common language. Mm. So, Rick, I'm going to call on you to give a sense of what we mean when we talk about common language, and then, Dr. Whitaker, I'd like for you to comment you know, back and see what we see if we don't all feel about the same way.
Okay.
Well, Elaine, from common language, and I'm presuming we're all using the same language to speak in terms of what we do, so we'll use the English language in this case.
Mm-hmm.
But the words we use conjure up visions, values, and perspectives that we have that actually ultimately drives our behavior in terms of what we do.
Mm-hmm.
And so understanding and aligning around those words that they would cause, again, the same perspectives, attitudes, and ultimately behavior is what is so important, you know, going forward. And a process that I've used over many, many years, something called nominal group technique. It's a way to get alignment around values, which form the basis of what people believe, so they can then go forward and describe, you know, in words what they mean. Let me give an example. You know, and this goes back to a discussion, Elaine, you're very familiar with a school superintendent, as we talked about high school dropout rate. And so as a business leader, I asked him, I said, so, Bill, what's the high school dropout rate in the district? Well, 3 or 4%. And as a conversation, well, no, Bill, what's the high school dropout rate? Certainly it's more than 3 or 4%. And we'd kind of work our way up, and I think I got him up to 10% in this conversation. I said, no, Bill, what are the number of students that started at ninth grade and completed, or the other way of, what's the number of students that started ninth grade and didn't complete the 12th grade and graduate from high school? And his reaction was, oh, we don't track that. We just track the number who come in and tell us they've dropped out. And I said, boy, if I managed a manufacturing environment like that, I would have a terrible issue. Well, as it turns out, and as we see today, you know, and across this nation, some school districts may track dropout rate, the number of students who declare they're not going to show up any more than 10%, but the number who actually the throughput, you know, at maybe 66% get through, or a dropout rate of 33%. So two very smart people, I make the presumption, I've got some knowledge, you know, in a good discussion, until we really sat down and had that dialogue, didn't have a common definition of what it means to be a dropout. And I think that's a great example when I think about the common language.
And that's exactly where we fell, because when Rick and I first started working together, I actually brought in a mathematician who is a statistician throughout the state of California, and he sat down and spent literally a day with us giving Rick a lesson on business math versus education math. It's as if they are two different worlds. And it's not for want of an intent to deceive. It's just that when you're dealing with numbers that have to do with measuring results, you have a different view when you're dealing with people moving through a system versus parts moving through a system. And so they come up with different ways of justifying, verifying, or measuring that incidence. And I think you and I agreed on that almost right away when we first talked, Dr. Whitaker. And I think that's what was real important, was that we understood that people intend to help. I mean, the value that parents have for an education is different than the value of the principal of the high school, that's different than the value of the teacher who's in the classroom, mm-hmm. that's different than the community. And for example, in one of our recent interviews with Mayor Pro Tem for the city of La Mirada, California, he said that one of the greatest struggles they have in their city between the school district and City Hall is that the school district says, that's my territory, that belongs to the school board, don't bother me, and then the city council says, that's not your job, it's my job to run the schools. And Hal's position was, hold on, these kids have parents who pay taxes in our community, and they're going to be citizens of the future in this community. We darn well ought to care and ought to pay attention and see what we can do to help, and we need to work together more closely. And that's the kind of thing that I think you and I have been talking about you moving toward as you look at the process of putting together a summit for people who are further along and want to help but have experienced incredible problems working alone, and they want to come together and work in a more collaborative way. Would that be fair?
That would be definitely fair.
Excellent.
That's exactly what we're trying to accomplish here.
And so the idea behind all this is to take a look at people that that we've all worked with and sit down and say, what is the language of success? And is it a new language because it's a new time and because technology has impacted the way that kids learn, media has impacted the way people gather information and develop stories, and all of those pieces together then become part of the process for helping us understand why kids aren't doing well, when in fact we think that they have more opportunity and more resources than they've ever had. And in fact, the thing we want to briefly touch on when we come back is why this change has occurred in your view and where you've seen it work, what has been going on both in the community and the lives of the kids. This is Elaine Scott, Dr. Sonia Whitaker, Rick Stevens. We'll be right back.
The System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce by Rick Stevens and Elaine Scott is winning accolades as an accessible business novel with a striking new perspective about community collaboration and workforce development for the 21st century. In the book, community leaders in the fictional town of Chantilly learn why they must think and act differently to build a sustainable workforce for the future. Real stakeholder leaders from around the country have used the book as a model for their own communities. Vicki Hogan is president and CEO of the Vermilion Advantage in Danville, Illinois. She and the Vermilion team have been collaborating with Birth to Work to implement the strategies outlined in the system.
Your book is really incredible. It's like a roadmap that in story form really sheds the light on a national issue and makes it obvious in a story form who the key stakeholders really have to be to create sustainability.
Sustainable results will only come from collaboration, alignment, and integration of the people, programs, and ideas of a unified community. The System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, shines a light on the challenges that communities across the country are facing right now and the forces that drive and influence people's behaviors. Stakeholder leaders such as Angela Phillips-Diaz are using the book as a guide for effective stakeholder action. In her work with the University of California, Riverside, she's charged with improving the college-going rate in the region.
I literally have the book on my desk and use it as a reference tool all the time. It's been invaluable to me.
This system, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, is the guide for stakeholder leaders who want to do business as usual in a new way. Buy it today at birth2work.org or amazon.com.
Welcome back. This is Elaine Scott. This is Birth to Work Radio, and we're having a phenomenal discussion with Dr. Sonia Whitaker, the Director of Literacy and Social Science for the largest pre-K through 8th grade school district in the state of Illinois. She's bringing us information. One of the things we've been talking about is the notion of common language. And in common language for us at Birth to Work Radio, we would invite you to ask us questions about this discussion at info.birthtowork.org and come back and give us some of your thoughts about this conversation today. Dr. Whitaker, will you talk a little bit about your idea about common language?
Thank you very much, Elaine. And Rick, when I think of your term common language, and I think of the fact that it has to be regardless of the stakeholder group, regardless, again, if you're an educator or if you're from the healthcare profession or if you're from a faith or community-based organization, if we're going to accomplish the goal of making sure that our students are successful, we absolutely have to speak a common language. Now, I want to give you a very practical example of how I envision that happening in terms of schools connecting with various different stakeholder groups. And I had this conversation with several educators the other day. A key concept that could bring us all to the table is, what is it that we expect students to know and be able to do as a result of a completion at a particular grade level? That goes back to the conversation we had earlier about why are people so disconnected and what types of conversations that can we have that will bring us all to the table, because once we get there, we have to have some common goals in mind. And as it relates to preparing students for success in school and ultimately in life, the question is, what is it that we expect students to know and be able to do? Now, I want to translate that into academic language and say it's called our curriculum. And in many cases, as I travel across the country and I provide consultation to school districts, I ask them, you're in the process of writing your language curriculum. You're in the process of writing your social science curriculum. You're in the process of writing your science curriculum. You're in the process of writing your health curriculum. Who other than educators have you invited to the table to determine what students should know and be able to do? And I'll go back to your other question that you posed earlier, Elaine. What are people's response? It's almost like I'm speaking a foreign language. People look at me and they say, Are you suggesting we invite others in? Well, I'm thinking that we're attempting to prepare students who can be aerospace engineers. So if we are developing a curriculum in terms of the preparation of students, it would behoove us, for the lack of a better term, to invite people from the business sector in with us to engage. Again, beautiful, beautiful example of collaboration at its best. It says, I cannot determine what students are expected to know and be able to do so that they can contribute, so that they can become aerospace engineers, if I don't have direct relationships with other aerospace engineers or other educators or other businessmen who have that sector cover. Are you following what I'm saying? And so, again, back from the academic perspective, from pre-K all the way through 12th grade, there's got to be some conversation about what we expect students to know and be able to do. That is, it has to start from the very beginning, the alignment of the curriculum to what the workforce expectations are. And I would almost invite, I'm really big on, don't take my word for it, conduct an assessment. And that's one of the things that I would invite listeners to do. Don't take Dr. Whitaker's word for it. Go back and conduct an assessment. Pull local curriculums in local schools and view them from your perspective and see whether or not, based on what students are expected to know and be able to do, you feel that that is preparing them for success in the workforce. And if you're not confident of that, then you can invite positive, collaborative dialogue about how we can make adjustments, because curriculums can be adjusted. But the reality is that we have to work in harmony to determine what those expectations are. And another brief example I'll give of that with regards to common language, again, because I'm really into, I want what listeners to walk away with recommendations, is if you think about high school syllabuses, I discovered recently that across our entire country, less than 43% of the high school syllabuses, if you look at them, are not in alignment with the expectations for college. So as students go through and they decide which colleges they want to go to or what they want to major in, when college professors went back to look at the high school syllabuses, in many cases, the prerequisites, in many cases, the skills and knowledge base that students were expected to experience as a result of their high school experiences may not or were not in alignment with the expectations, even at the secondary level, even at the college level. And so, again, that's why I love this concept of common language. We've got to all be clear about what we expect students to know and be able to do and work collaboratively to create a model of success for our students that can be replicated across the entire country.
Sonia, those are two really good examples. And, you know, what's interesting, I think, in addition to this notion about inviting other people in, I think there's also this sense that, well, you know, maybe educators are responsible for education and business leaders are responsible for business and, you know, community leaders are responsible for what goes in the community. I think what you're talking about is everyone's responsible for education, because it doesn't occur just in the classroom.
Right.
And gaining this notion about common language is an important element. Now, there's one thing that's going on across the nation of P20 councils. Do you have comment about, you know, the value that you see in P20 councils or some of the experiences you may have had with them?
Actually, I'm not familiar at all. If you could give me some background, that'd be great.
Certainly. One of the things that many stakeholders are looking at is creating what they call P20 councils, mm-hmm. which are about, you know, really goes from the early learning, pre-K all the way up to college, mm-hmm. and they're pulling on its stakeholders across the entire education spectrum, so college, community college, high school, you know, primary ed, and the kindergarten level or pre-K. Mm-hmm. They're pulling in business leaders. They're pulling in government officials to be able to talk about what goes on from a policy standpoint. Mm-hmm. They're pulling in healthcare professionals. They're pulling in the media and beginning to really look at developing this common language. And their whole put is to start talking about how would they discuss policy that would then impact the stakeholders in such a way that it would drive these common discussions. But in many cases, they're in their infancy, but they're really a beginning step at the state level to start really, you know, working some of those elements. Sound like a worthy concept?
Well, definitely. And again, that gets us back to the point where we're developing a common language which then translates into policy, which then translates into regulations that people must adhere to, and that's critically important.
But I'm going to follow up on something Rick was just saying, however, and what you mentioned earlier. I appreciate the fact that there's a need to have this common language across curriculum. However, I want to bring it back to local communities.
Okay.
One of the things that we had an opportunity to do was to talk with the people from Danville, Illinois, and the Vermilion Advantage. And what they're doing is working with their local stakeholder groups to build a local vision. All too often, kids are kind of forced, and then I'm thinking they're almost pushed into this sense that if they don't go away to college or don't go somewhere else after they graduate from high school, there's an issue. In fact, they're not even prepared to work in their own communities. And I think if we're going to look at curriculum that matters, there needs to be also a sense of curriculum, if you will, that brings kids up to speed and ready so that they can work right where they are and see opportunity and see advantage and know the resources that are right in front of their doorstep. And that has been a source of real angst for me as I watch all too often people trying to get kids, you know, as if they need to be somewhere else. Sometimes they don't need to be.
Well, on the point you're raising, Elaine, which I think is a good one, in all of this we have to recognize the local culture that goes on. Because even the kids and parents have language about the culture. I'm Native American, so there's a certain culture that comes with, you know, my particular heritage that's important from an educational standpoint in the community. But it's all got to tie together in this integrated way. And so I think the point you're raising, Elaine, is there's not a cookie-cutter approach. There are principles that need to be applied in this particular area as we think about how to go forward.
I agree, and I think that the notion of people taking control of education doesn't have to be about preparing every kid to be an aerospace scientist. What it has to do with are basic competencies and basic skills that in our new workforce, that capable person in the workforce of the future has actually things like interpersonal skills, intra-relational skills. They have the kinds of skills that will enable them to collaborate and work across several different boundaries. We want to take a quick break, and then we want to come back and we want to spend a few minutes talking about a conference called Achieving the Dream and Restoring the Hope. This is Elaine Scott. This is Birth to Work Radio, and we'll be right back. This is Elaine Scott. I'm speaking this afternoon with Dr. Sonia Whitaker, Rick Stevens, and we are talking about achieving the dream, restoring the hope for the future. And this is a conference that you've been dreaming about, you've been passionate about. What I wanted to do, though, is say something about you and how we met and when we met, because it has everything to do with why I invited you to come and share what your dream is on this show.
Mm-hmm.
You are what, in Birth to Work, we would call the supreme community stakeholder. You're not working only for the purpose of earning a paycheck, and you're not keeping what you've learned to yourself. You're continuously learning, and you're making a stake in your community, in the education community, by putting your own resources down and saying, I want to have a conference, and I want to begin to put into practice what I've learned, and I want to take that risk, and I want to invite others to come and join me. And for that reason, I want to say hats off. And I want you to talk about that and tell us a little bit about what that dream is and how you expect to see that unfold.
Thank you again very much for giving me the opportunity to actually get really humbled. As much as things are going well in the preparation for the summit, which is Saturday, November the 15th, 2008, here in Hoffman Estates, Illinois, the reality is it's a very humbling experience because, again, as I mentioned, I see myself as a conduit. I am responsible for bringing people together, giving them the opportunity to come to the table and discuss key critical factors that impact student achievement. It is my belief that illiteracy is the single most important yet least understood issue of our time. It impacts us regardless of from either perspective, if we are, again, from the healthcare or business perspective, from a parent perspective or community-based perspective. The reality is that we are all impacted. And in preparing for this summit, what I discovered is that many, many adults and children are stakeholders and were directly impacted by our ability to make sure that students are successful. And I'd just like to share a quick story with you, that really moved me, and that was when I was in Michigan and I had a conversation with a number of community-based folks. And I said to the members of the audience that my little line is, pay now or pay later. But at some point, we're all going to pay. And so I said to this audience, and to my surprise, I said, what is the cost of us failing to collaborate on the topic of literacy? And I had a man stand up, and I can see his face today, around 40-year-old man. He stood up and he said, I'm the cost. and everyone in the audience looked, and everyone got silent, and I didn't know what was going to happen next. I was in a town hall discussion that I was leading. He said, I'm 40 years old, and I'm functionally literate, and that's the first time I've ever said that out loud. He said, I don't even know if my parents even knew. He said, I passed every single grade level in school. He said, I wasn't even identified for remediation. But the reality is that I came here today because I knew that this is what you were going to be talking about. And I wanted people to be able to put a face, Elaine, to this mission. And so I remember that man's face. He was at least confident enough to get dressed to come to hear what we were talking about, the importance of literacy surrounded by a community effort where everyone is invested. And I was able to see a real-life face. I couldn't figure out why in the world I was blessed with that opportunity to see his face, but I can see it as I speak with you today. And so that's the concept, again, behind the summit. Going back to my original statement, if educators could have done it alone, we would have done it a long time ago. And if parents could have did it alone, we would have done it a long time ago. And so the Achieving the Dream Summit is really about, which is my dream, is about restoring hope. That's exactly where the title came from, because somehow, some way, I believe that in America, we've lost hope and our ability to really pull together, to really dig deep within the depths of our soul and reach out to the person next to us and make sure that they're having positive experiences. And I think about the concept of self-fulfilling prophecy. When we believe we can achieve, we achieve. In fact, it's funny, I'm looking down, and again, that's the other concept behind the conference, the Achieving the Dream. When we believe that we can do, we do. But when we're not seeing the type of gains that we want, when adults come to me who are members of the workforce, who are leaders, rather, in the workforce, and say, I'm frustrated because I want to be able to hire students who are young adults who are well-prepared, but they're simply lacking the skills, at some point, if that continues to happen, even members of the business organization will lose a sense of hope in the educator's ability to produce competent children who then become competent adults. So the concept behind this summit, and I think the timing is right, November 15, 2008, and I wanted to bring people to the table as soon as possible so that we can combine our resources and our intelligences to come up with solutions. Less than 10% of our time will be spent on identifying problems. 90% of our time will be spent on coming up with at least the first steps, because it is a one-day summit, and absolutely additional conversations have to be had, and they are scheduled to take place on a quarterly basis after that event. But we have to at least come together to begin to identify some of the basic steps that we have to take, going back to the concept of common language that we have to take to combine our efforts to ensure that our students and ultimately our country is successful.
Well, Sonia, we really want to thank you for the opportunity to be able to help sponsor this message through our radio show, through our network, and the people that we are engaged with on our website. And we want very much to help you make that a blazing success and a real showcase for the very important ideas of community and collaboration. Now, tell me real quick, how do people get more information about that?
I think there's two great ways. Actually, you can email me personally at Sonia@Whitaker-consulting.com, or reach me via phone at 630-777-6367. That's 630-777-6367. Or go to the website www.whitaker-consulting.com.
Thank you. We want to let our listeners know that speaking of this idea of community and collaboration in our book, Seeking the Soul of Commerce, we lay out the entire scenario of a community where people are struggling with just this issue about business, about the relationship between business and media and education, and how people struggle and come together as the book unfolds and find ways to hold common language, common vision, and common understanding, shaping a shared value so that value shapes their vision for moving into the future. We look forward to talking with you again next week. Sonia, thank you very much.
Thank you.
And we look forward to the success of the conference and to seeing you there. This is Elaine Scott. This is Rick Stevens, Dr. Sonia Whitaker, Birth to Work Radio, and we'll talk to you again next week. Thank you.
Thank you for joining us on Birth to Work Radio. For more information about Birth to Work, to stream or download podcasts of archived radio programs, or to purchase a hard copy or downloadable version of Rick and Elaine's book, The System, Igniting the Soul of Commerce, please visit our website at birthtowork.org. That's birth, the number two, work.org. We invite you to send us your feedback and questions directly by emailing info@birthtowork.org. Birth to Work Radio, the voice of community stakeholder leaders.